Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show. Hello, Dan here, along with Michael. And we've got a very special guest today. We'll introduce him in a second or two. International break, so we thought we'd do something different.
Completely forgot there was an England game. So we were just, before we started recording, Johnny mentioned it and I was like, oh yeah, that's what international breaks are for.
This will have happened in the past now, because this is going to come out.
There's probably another England game. Are there several?
Next one is at the weekend on Monday, I think.
Why are they bothering?
I like how we
since Calvin Phillips left, yeah, whatever.
We really nail the details on this show, don't we? This is Johnny Cooper from Opta. Hi, Johnny. We know each other from way back when, don't we? Because you started out. I like to think we gave you the springboard for your entire career, writing stuff in the Square Ball some years back.
100%. It was the Simon Grayson promotion season. And at that point, I was hoping to go into sports journalism. So this was like, you know, incredible, really getting my work in the in the magazine. And did 3 or 4 articles and then changed my mind on going into sports journalism and just used to buy the magazine instead rather than writing for it. But
so you're at Johnny Cooper 26 on Twitter, which is where people will know you. You do great Leeds stats for Opta, often finding like new and interesting angles on stuff. We'll get to all that. And so when you were writing for us, how old were you then when you were penning stuff for the Square Ball?
Well, I must have been 15, I think, the first time. And then, yeah, between sort of 15 and 18. So when I was, obviously when you're 15 and you're reading the magazine, like people are swearing, you know, and like you'd be reading the articles and it'd be like, someone would say, you know, this, you know, fucking, I don't know who was a poor player for us back then. I don't know.
Pistone,
you know, or somebody like that. So I read that and I thought, oh, wow, I can swear, like, you know, because obviously at school you can't put your English language dissertation or whatever, you can't swear. So I did the end of the 2009-10 season when we got promoted, I did a review of all the players, and my review of Paddy Kisnorbo was just, Paddy Kisnorbo is fucking brilliant. So I've written that and I thought, they don't need to say any more about that because he was incredible that season. So comes to the first game of the next season, Derby at home, and I've picked up the magazine and I thought, I'm going to read through this. And it just said, number 3, Patrick Kisnorbo, and then underneath it just said, brilliant. It had just been totally cut. And there was hardly any swearing. I thought, yeah, I probably didn't need to do all that swearing, actually. So that was a good lesson.
So I mean, swearing is big and clever.
That's why I first got into Square Ball, to be honest, as well. Similar experience, yeah. Buying it as a teenager and being like, oh, it's good. It's got swearing and jokes I don't understand.
Anarchy.
And pictures of Kylie Minogue at the time as well. It were quite big in the mid-90s.
So, I mean, of course, we didn't give you your In platform into your career. You did far better without us, to be perfectly honest.
In that first season as well, it was a couple of your mates selling it as well.
Yep, they were, yeah. Ollie and James, give them a shout out.
Why did you not do it? Lazy.
Oh, wow. That's right on the spot. yeah, that is true. Lazy. Definitely lazy. Lazy teenager. Yeah, I was too busy writing for it, to be fair.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
I do remember actually walking down to buy it from you on the Lowfield Sunnel. I just remember you passing it to me and I went to give you like a quid and you just went, no, no, it's all right, mate. And that was like, oh, wow, it's free. Which is great.
Have you been giving freebies away?
To special people.
Oh, good lad.
Make you pay for yours.
So I'm interested in the Football Manager thing as well. So you ended up doing the lead stats for Football Manager.
Correct. Yeah.
So how does that come about then?
So I can't remember where I actually first saw it, but I think it could have possibly been on Twitter, where somebody had retweeted something, maybe with the hashtag LUFC, and said, we are looking for a new Football Manager researcher for Leeds. So I got in touch with the guy who's called Dean. And he said, oh yeah, it sounds great. You know, you go to all the home games and you've got great knowledge of all the players. I think I said my favourite player was Lubo Mišolić, which obviously isn't normal. So he probably thought, oh, he's probably got a weird knowledge of football. So that always kind of helps.
Did you have any sort of background in stats prior to that? Or was it just done on spec?
No, literally nothing. It was just more knowing a lot about Leeds and the players. That's always been the way in, really. And then it was, the Football Manager stuff was a really good way of being able to say, this is what I do, and it's obviously a great game. And
so how do you decide stats for Football Manager
then? What season is this?
Yeah, I was
just
going to say, what year was it? Yeah,
so this was between 2012-13 and 2014-15. So you've got like the glory years of like Warnock, McDermott, Hockaday, Rosler, maybe Redfern, I guess, was the end of that season. Mm. So basically, you get a big... if you've played Football Manager and seen all the... all the stats, so... you know, Luke Varney, 15 pace, you know, that would be me deciding that. So the funny story was, I don't know if you remember when GFH were on about signing Ashley Barnes.
Yeah.
And then he didn't because his stats weren't as good as Luke Varney. So that was my fault. So I'd given Luke Varney...
You're shouldering that one.
Yeah, I'm going to shoulder the blame for that one. So that was my fault.
Is there anyone from that... I'm trying to think who would have been in the kind of youth team then. Was there anyone that you missed who turned out to be good? I'm sure I think it would have been like, would Lewis Cook or...
Lewis Cook was coming through, and he was, I think he was quite well known that he was going to do quite well. I think I didn't miss anybody. I probably did. I mean, I remember Alex Mowat coming through around about that time, and that kind of came out of nowhere. I remember rating him not that well. I think he was captain of the youth team for a bit, and then he came into the first team and obviously was really good, and then we had to kind of bump him up. So I think Sam Byram that first season as well coming through. So there were a few, but it's one of them where, even if you have missed a player, and I think Fabian Delph on one of the old ones was like a centre back or something, and he was completely wrong position, and then he came through and was brilliant. And it can be difficult, you know, unless you've got an in-depth knowledge of the youth team.
So if you don't have an encyclopedic knowledge, is there a bit of hit and hope that involved in that? And
sometimes, yeah. I mean, I actually saw something on Twitter about Monty Gimple. Do you remember Monty Gimple? Yeah. So he was in the youth team around that time, and I think he had quite a good rating because he was quite highly rated, and then obviously that. Well, he's done really well for his career. I think he's doing really well. But
works in the city now, doesn't he? For anyone who's not seen that, but yeah, I at the time, I think mainly he just had a good agent, didn't he? Because he was constantly being linked with Arsenal and Man United and all. I think Bayern Munich at one point.
It's a bit like Cody Drama is the proto example, isn't it? Yeah,
well, I think he will go on to have a career, though. I think.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he's going to go to Borussia Dortmund and Newcastle. They're all after him. He's on loan at Luton.
Yeah.
Did you get to decide chairman stats as well? Because in the older games, you could see the chairman stats, couldn't you? And I think at some point they decided to not display them because I think Ken Bates kind of got upset by being badly rated at certain things.
Yeah, that was around the time when there was the takeover as well. Mm. So you had to kind of try and keep track of who everybody was. So it was like New Ruddin was the chairman, I think.
Yeah.
But with Ken Bates, the amount of people who had like this disliked person, Ken Bates, was insane. It was crazy. Like, there's so many.
What chairman ratings did you have? Because I think I was busy off having young children around this point, so I kind of fell off the Football Manager wagon for a bit.
I suppose it was things like, I don't know if this was actually the term, but like generosity. So like, would this chairman, put money in for a transfer? Patience.
Right. Yeah, and I think there were some ratings about basically
questionable opinions about the Chinese.
Yeah, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. It's funny, I've played that version of Champ Manager relatively recently because... Yeah. I know we've kind of had our ongoing watch, which seems to have been stalled again, our 102 version of it, but I was looking for...
I mean, that was Championship Manager back then.
That was Championship Manager, yeah. Same game though, it's all got taken over, didn't it? But as we did the Football Manager Marathon, which was the minus 15 season,
I love that.
So I was trying to find an interesting one to play, and I thought the Warnock season is kind of... It felt like a bit of a low point, so I thought if you're having to take on promotion with Brownie and Tongi and Varney and all of his boys, I thought it'd be quite an interesting starting point. So, yeah, I have actually played that version relatively
recently.
How did
you get on? Did you take them up?
I did eventually, yeah. I think I got up second season and I think I've abandoned it somewhere in the Premier League. Yeah. I was doing all right, though.
Yeah.
I think I was doing all right, but I suspect the game's easier than real life.
I think so.
Have you got a big regret from the Championship Manager, Football Manager, like stats? Is there one player where you thought, I really missed the boat on that one, or... God, I got him right.
Or was it Luke Varney having 15 pace?
I think it's probably Luke Varney would be the main one, yeah. I think, most of it was pretty much spot on, I would say. I would say that, though, obviously. But yeah, looking back, I don't think there was anyone who I thought, why is Mikhail Forsell scoring 30 goals when his legs have gone? I think everybody was pretty much spot on.
Were there any stats that you had to determine that you don't see on like the public side of the game, like behind-the-scenes stats? Because I know there are certain attributes that are hidden.
Can you see disliked people on the actual game?
I think you can.
And you can, yeah. Because El Hadj Diouf was in Neil Warnock's, and then I had to remove him when Diouf signed, so. Yeah, which was good, because he was a sewer rat.
Tendency to spit, tendency to grab groin, that sort of thing. So, from Football Manager to Opta, what was that? What was that journey like?
Yeah, so that was a bit of serendipity, I'd say, because it was summer 2013. So basically, just to give a background to what else I was doing. So Football Manager was just you got the game free at the end, but you didn't get paid for it. So I worked at Tesco for 3 years. So I left sixth form, had a place at university, but decided I didn't want to go to university for plenty of reasons and just thought it's not for me. So I went to work at Tesco, do the Football Manager stuff. And then after about a year, got an email from Dean, who did the head researching basically for all the Northern teams. So, and he said, oh, I've just seen this job come up at Opta. And the office used to be at Park Lane College, just up from Park Lane College. And said, oh, I think, you know, anybody who's based in the North, you know, particularly around, you know, West Yorkshire should really look at applying for the job because you all do similar stuff, Football Manager, if it's interesting. And it was Opta and it was, you know, as a data editor. So I applied, you know, I looked at my CV and I thought, not really got a lot on my CV. So I put a load of effort into my cover letter and mentioned like old footballers from the 90s. Like I looked back through my old sticker albums that I had when I was a kid and I was like, Hamilton Recards on there. So I'll just drop that in and, you know, old Bradford players and just thought I need to try and stand out from the crowd because my CV wasn't the best. So ended up getting an interview for that. Got down to the last two people. This is when I was 19 and unfortunately didn't get the job. Somebody else got the job. And then I basically just kept on badgering the person who did my interview and said, please, are there any jobs coming up or can you let me know? And then I think the year later I did a couple of days like work experience. And then it wasn't until about another 9 months after that that I got an email from a very stressed person who would later be my boss saying, we need somebody in ASAP. The season starts at Saturday. This is like Monday. Can you start? And I was like, yes, absolutely. Get me in. So, yeah.
Stripy uniform at Tesco in the bin.
Gone. Yeah. My last shift at Tesco was at midnight on Friday night. And I started at 11 o'clock at Opta on the Saturday. Didn't have any break between jobs.
Bloody hellfire.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's the thing that I'd like to sort of like stress really is, I don't have a university degree in statistics or anything like that. I just have, I suppose, a good knowledge of football. And I was just really determined that I knew that job was for me, really, and it would be perfect. So that was kind of my way in, was just being an absolute nuisance.
Why did you know it was for you?
I think certain jobs just fit certain people. And I just think, I can't think of another job that I would be better at, if that makes sense. You know, like some people are just really good at, you know, finance. So they go and, you know, be a banker or things like that. Whereas my passion is football and remembering stats from years gone by. I mean, there's that line in Fever Pitch where he says, somebody was having a conversation with him about an Arsenal game in the 70s. And he said, oh, do you remember that game when we beat Newcastle 5-2? And he replies, no, it's 5-3. And I try not to be a bit like that because you'd be a bit of an arsehole. But like being able to remember games from years gone by and knowing the results, who scored, who made the debut. Do you remember when Philippe da Costa got sent off against Bury? Things like that. So, and then the job that I do, you know, I'll come onto it, but, you know, is being able to remember those things off the top of your head helps, if that makes sense. And then you can actually delve into the database.
I know when I first started going to Leeds games, I used to think I'll remember all of this forever. Because I think it was, I don't know if it's just because you're when I was a kid, just had not as much information floating about. But like I remember like my first 20 games or whatever, I could remember absolutely everything about them. And then at some point around like early 2000s, just gone. Couldn't remember what happened the previous week.
Yeah.
I think it may have been drinking. was the key factor in it. Just going to going to an away game and thinking, I don't know, we lost. I can't really remember what happened or just gone anymore.
Destroying your brain. I can remember stuff from years and years ago. And I was like you, I was always kind of a geek for kind of numbers. Like, you know, the back few pages of the program where they've got the player appearances. I always used to like that to be orderly and the subs in that column the shirt numbers. And it always fascinated me, the kind of grid layout of it. I don't know what it was particularly, but it's just had a real magnetism for me. Like, and seeing the league table printed in there, which is funny, isn't it? Given that football's on every day of the week these days and it's always hideously out of date. But player appearances and the attendances always stuck with me as well. I always loved it when we got over 30,000 when we were, but so I obviously started going in the 80s when it was a proper low point for attendances. But every now and then, we have an attendance against like Bradford City or whatever that got me 33,000. You're like, oh, it's so exciting. It's a different number in that column.
I don't know if you used to had the old, you know, history books, the old Leeds history
like Rothmans
books.
And
Rothmans, like that, yeah. And, you know, I've got all them at home. And I think the one that I remember when I was a kid going to the library and being taken out every week was the one by David Saffer and Malcolm McDonald years ago. I think it used to have like John Charles on the front of it. And it just had like, I think it was up to like 1989, every player who played and like their statistics and who was the manager in that year and, you know, again, like you say, what the attendance was, who scored, and then just like literally just flicking through that. And
that book,
it.
I'm fairly sure, you could pay an amount of money before that was published to get your name in the back of it. And my name's in that book.
Oh, really?
It is. I'm one of the names in it. Yeah, I've got a copy of it somewhere. It'll be in my loft at home somewhere. But yeah, that's just brought back a memory. Yeah. So explain what it is that you do at OpToThem. What's the job title and what does that involve?
So we are in the data insights team now. We used to be data editorial. It's kind of, it's the same thing, just a different name. So basically, I suppose a lot of people would have seen OpToJoe on Twitter. So OpToJoe, basically we tweet out the best stats. We either do that during a week. If there's no games on, like today, Mesut Ozil's just retired. So there's like three or four stats about Mesut Ozil.
Truthfully, I'd guess he retired about 4 years ago.
he's been like sort of just, I couldn't even tell you the last team he played for. I think somewhere in Turkey, I think.
So is it your job then to take raw, do you put together raw data or do you take raw data that exists and then turn it into facts?
That's exactly it, yeah. Other people collect the data that then pumps into the database and then we can then extract that from the database. So just for instance, just giving an example of Mesut Ozil. So he has the record since 2003-04, which is when we started collecting detailed statistics for the Premier League, which is like chances created, passes, tackles. So he's created the most chances in a season since then. So as soon as he retired today, whoever was working would have thought, he has the record for that. We need to just tweet that and we need to give that, you know, to our followers. And I think we've got 1.3 million followers now, which is, you know, is crazy. And you know, we've got a big reach of people we can tweet stats to. And we know sort of which players and which teams tend to get the most retweets and the most interaction. And, you know, that's really good for us. And OpToJoe kind of has the trademark of a number at the front, then the fact, and then it's got an end word. So it could be like a player has just scored the winning goal third game in a row, and it could be like timing as the end word because he's, you know, done it again, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's one part of our job. And OpToJoe is run by about 10 of us. We've got 10 of us in the team. So it's not like we've got...
Kobe, where's Joe?
I know. And there is an OpToJohnny, but that's rugby. So I'm not involved in that. But so we just run that ourselves, basically. And we know the stats that people are interested in, or well, we'd like to think we do. That's one part of the job. And then we do a lot of stuff during the live games. So if you're watching Sky on a weekend, Leeds are playing Man United. Say, for instance, the game was on Sky when we played them at Old Trafford this season and Willy Nonto scored that goal after a minute. Somebody is then looking in our files or in our database. When was the last time a player scored in the first minute at Old Trafford against Man United? Or when was the last time a Leeds player scored in the first minute? And then that's a fact. And then we give that to whoever works at Sky. And then Martin Tyler might read that out live on air. So it's kind of an instant gratification as a job because you are, especially now working at home, because we work at home all the time now, you sat in your own house and you give something via a computer and then it gets read out on the TV.
I did that!
It is crazy, yeah. And it's funny because I've been there for 8 years now and you kind of get numb to it almost. Like, I remember the first, because I do Match of the Day as well, a lot of stuff on Match of the Day. So any stats that Gary Lineker reads out, Alan Shearer, or they'll put a little table up, like they'll be explaining, you know, this player's won the most possession in this game this season and they'll do like the top five. So we'll have sent that to them. So I'll have sent that, maybe some, I might send that in the evening, somebody who I work with sent that. And then it goes out live to millions of people in the evening. And when I first started, it was like, oh my God, that's incredible. And then now you kind of get a bit like, oh yeah, no, I do it every week. Like that's normal. But it is really incredible actually to do that and have that kind of impact on the coverage.
Because I mean, I don't understand databases. So this stuff all just exists. Some engineers, some very clever engineers, no doubt, have built a very clever database. So you just tap in whatever it is you want to find. So if you want to find out who was the last player to score at Old Trafford in the first minute, let's say, how do you do that?
A lot of it is Microsoft Excel. So the reports are in the database and there's hundreds of different reports. So for like that, you would run like what we call a goal report. And then that basically spits out the date of every goal, what minute it was scored in, who scored it, did he score with his right foot, was it inside the box, who assisted it, who was the goalkeeper, all that kind of stuff. And then you just put that in a big Excel file. And then as soon as, like you say, first minute of the goal, filter out 1 minute, and then you just look at it from there. But it does take it. Excel knowledge is obviously very important. And when I first started, I didn't really have a great knowledge of Excel. I used to use it because I used to collect Leeds data and stuff before I started. But like since I've been at Opta, like it's built up over time, and it's very, very key now to the job.
What sort of Leeds data were you accumulating then before you did this, and what was the reasoning for that? Was it just that you were sort of fascinated by the whole thing?
Yeah, literally just a geek, really. Yeah, just like who played in each game, doing an all-time results, so for every game and what score was, and then you can filter out various whether a player scored, if he had a good record. And then once I started at Opta, I sort of saw how they collected it, I suppose, in Excel, and then I started doing that myself. So I think it was about a year after I'd been at Opta, I did put together a big file which has every player to play in every game for Leeds, and then like whether they scored, what squad number they were wearing, who the team they were playing against.
How big an undertaking is that? Are you doing it all on your own?
Yeah, that's all manually as well. So it's like it took me about 6 months, I would say, to put it properly together, and then I added to it like I've got like who assisted every goal back to about 1990, I think. Yeah, and again, that was manually watching the videos of like, it's crazy. Like, you watch the Howard Wilkinson team and the amount of goals we score from corners is Strachan knocking a ball in, Mel Sterling either knocking it on or scoring himself is crazy that season.
It's hard to tell because we did obviously watch back a lot of those games for the Match Ball 30 we did. And the amount of times you're struggling with the grainy footage as well to work out who it is because you're like, is that Chris Fairclough? Is it Chris White? I can't really tell because you're looking at such a horribly pixelated image and you're like...
Yeah, and a lot of it, when they've digitised old TV footage onto like YouTube, it's really bad, isn't it? So all you can see is like, it looks a bit like Sensible Soccer used to look, like a little, about 4 pixels over there by the near post or whatever.
Yeah, that was definitely an issue for the early 90s stuff because especially like the further back you go, the less knowledge I have of the players. So, I mean, like early 2000s, that's, you know, everyone knows those players, but there's stuff like Andy Williams.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't really know what he looked like. You know, and yeah, just know him as a singer, really. I didn't know. He assisted a few goals, and it's like, yeah, I had to really slow down the footage to work it out.
What I'm trying to get to the bottom of what it speaks to in your character that made you want to do that. That's fascinating.
It's weird. I think it's one of them things where I was just really good at retaining the knowledge, I would say. So, like, if someone had a quiz question, they would always come to me. Or if we do a quiz, football quiz, Johnny, you need to come with us for the quiz. You know, and that's, you know, you kind of in there by default and. Oh, just let Johnny do it. I mean, I remember we were mentioning Ollie and James, who used to sell square ball. The first away game we went to was MK Dons. I think Snodgrass got ahead of promotion
last
season.
Last minute.
Great first away game. And we were doing the Daily Star crossword in the back, and it was a football crossword. And Ollie had it in the middle, and he was doing it for a bit. And then I was just like, yeah, that's that player. And he just went, oh, for fuck's sake. You just do it. You know, you're
spoiling all my fun.
You kind of want to be on the edge of not being too annoying, but also like, just give me the paper, you know. So it's, yeah, and... It's like when I used to do science at school, like I was awful at science because I just wasn't interested. Like I wasn't interested in the, you know, learning about it. Whereas with Leeds, I am interested in who scored in 1924 against Man United.
Does it kind of colour your view of how you watch football now? Like, can you watch it as just a fan or are you kind of watching it as a statistician as well?
That is a great question because there were times, especially under Bielsa, where there were certain players who were just incredible and had certain stats where I knew in my head before the game, if he does that in that game, he's the first player to do that since. And in my head, I'm like, I hope he does it. But I'm thinking, for God's sake, watch the game. Watch the game. So I've tried to kind of stop doing that. So like, I mean, you have to ask the people who sit next to me at Leeds games, at home games. I'm, you know, I can be a bit irate and get up and shout and swear and whatever. And
You watch a game then and you're doing that, do you then go back and watch the game again and get the stats from it?
No.
Will that just be for Opta to do that?
So Opta's already collected that now. Right. So say the stuff in like the 90s that I collected myself, they'd not collected, Opta didn't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can
marry up the data between
exactly
the two.
That, right, yeah. So, you know, it could sometimes it can be quite debatable whether, you know, a player has scored, like Jack Harrison the other day, the own goal, which then got given to, I think it was Solly March. And that, I think it looked like an own goal to me, but that got changed later by the Premier League, so dubious goals panel. So there can be times where you're relying on the governing bodies to work it out. But
how do you watch football, Michael? Like, you know, when you're in the ground, because you start like making notes, don't you, occasionally, like in your phone about stuff that's happening in the game? Because I, with the Match Ball, I know it won't ever come across like this, but I just come in and wing it a lot of the time.
No way.
Particularly for the home.
Yeah, that's because you're hosting it. So you just have to go, what did you think of Jack Harrison today?
Yeah, I've got the easy job.
So you can just do that. I only do it because I don't want to be stuck for things. I'll miss anything major out. Like if there was a goal disallowed that I've forgotten about and we just don't mention it, it looks bad. And I know people will now point out many occasions where that has happened. But generally speaking, I just like to have a vague reminder of it. The way I organise notes when I do it by minute, but then at the bottom of my notes app, I put more general stuff that I've noticed.
Yeah.
So like under Marsh, it was typically like, we can't pass to each other or something, it would say underneath it.
Was that borne out in the stats?
Yes. So this season under Jesse Marsh, we were top for unsuccessful passes across Europe's top five leagues.
Wow.
England, France, Germany, Italy, Spain.
So that's like 100 teams or whatever, nearly?
Yeah. I think it was something like 2,000, over 2,000. And we were top by a couple of hundred.
Oh, so all the top divisions, like not...
Yeah, including France, Germany, Italy, and Spain. So we were. So you, that's the thing you can kind of compare across.
World beating.
Yeah, world beating.
World beating.
Yeah.
Have you come across any, because that supports what you're watching, do you come across stats ever that you think, well, that can't be right? Like if for example, you did, there was some stat on the marsh that suggested we were good at passing, you would have watched it and you'd have gone, well, what's happened to the stats there? Either it's wrong or there's something in the play that's making it better because there's a lot of successful passes just between centre-backs or something.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes you watch a game and you think, you come away from it and you're watching like the midfielders and you think, Jesus, he gave the ball away a lot today, didn't he? Like, he was constantly giving the ball away. You look at the stats, like three unsuccessful passes, and you think, I've only picked out the ones that have been really bad. Actually, like Rocker is the one who obviously gets quite a lot of criticism, but, you know, he's well up there for things like progressive passes, you know, forward passes. And sometimes you watch games and you think he's just knocking it back to the defenders and keeping it simple, but actually the stats say, you know, say different. And, you know, that's part of my job, really, is making sure people can see the game slightly differently.
It was on one of the Square Ball emails last week. It was either, I can't remember if it was Rob or Moscow, but on the Mark Rocker progressive passes thing, they did say a stat made up by his mum, so she can say he's good. Which made me laugh.
Has Gracia improved things since he's come in terms of pass completion?
Yes. I think we are now 10th for unsuccessful passes per game compared to first under Marsh. 10th in the Premier League. So I think we were 105 per game under Marsh, and now we're 83 under Gracia. Right. And I don't actually have the passing accuracy stats to hand, which is terrible as a stato, but yeah, they have steadily improved.
So what's the general shape of Leeds' season then from a statistics point of view?
Not very good.
The underlying data, not good.
Well, the running data is good, which again was something that people, you know, the thing is with running data, people praised us under Bielsa for that, and I don't think you can then criticise us under a different manager because we run a lot. I think that was a stat that we, you know, the top three distances covered in the Premier League this season are all Leeds, and they're all games we actually avoided defeating. I think we won two of them. And again, even things like sprints, which under Bielsa in the first season, we were like thousands ahead for sprints, like from any Premier League team. Obviously, people say that was just a fake season because it was behind closed doors. Teams weren't trying as hard, but, you know, we were like the outlier for that. You know, things like pressures and pressing, we were well up there for, you know, under Marsh. And that's obviously something that Gracia has changed. With the Brighton game where fans were starting to get a bit edgy when they weren't closing people down.
A nice understatement, that.
Yeah.
I'm aware this is a very, very open question, but what do you make of XG?
Well, I mean, it has got its place. It's one of those things where it's just an added extra.
Well, tell you what, before you answer the question completely, explain to us what XG is from your point of view, because we try and explain it and never quite get the words right.
Yeah. So every shot has got an expected goals value. So it's a percentage basically out of 100. But it's obviously, when you look at the XG, like halftime of a game on Sky, they'll have XG now, and it'll say 1.3. So every shot is out of 100% what chance you've got of scoring that from that position.
Decimalised though, isn't it?
Like, yeah, decimalised. Yeah, exactly. So that's basically saying, so before you would just have, say you've had a team who's had 15 shots. If they've had those 15 shots all from outside the box, you know, it looks good that they've had 15 shots, but actually, They were from nowhere and they went miles wide. Whereas you look at it just as like they've had loads of shots, that looks good. And XG would then say, well, actually, it was only 0.9 XG. So, and that's something that we have actually noticed from probably, you know, Opta putting that out there, is teams are having a lot fewer shots from outside the box now. And that's married up with the data. And a part of that is XG coming in and saying the XG for that shot is very, very, very low. You should actually be trying to take a shot from closer in because you've got more chance of scoring.
Right.
Does that make sense? So yeah. Every shot's got a value, and that's come from thousands of shots.
So does it mean then, if that shot is, let's say it's a 0.4 XG, does that mean that that shot has gone in 40% of the time from that position?
Yeah, of an average player from the shots that have been analysed.
Does it factor in the players then and their abilities? Say if it's a defender in that position rather than attacker?
I'm not sure about the player. It does factor in where other players are on the pitch.
Right.
So say you've got like he's 5 yards out, he's got an open net, and there's no other players around him, that would be very high XG. If he's 5 yards out and he's off balance and there's players all around him and he has a shot, that would be a lower XG because there are other factors involved. The goalkeeper might be stood in his way.
So does XG function best then when it's used with other stats to say, like you say, 15 shots from outside the box, but the XG is low, suggests they're all long speculative efforts. So you're able to then construct a more rounded picture of what's happening.
Yeah, it's better to use it over a few games or over a season rather than just individual shots. I always say it's you shouldn't really be using it for individual shots, to be honest. People are interested in who's had the highest XG shot this season without scoring, because they only want to put together like a compilation of worst misses kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that's something we get asked for. And
how much does professional football use XG and the stats connected to it then? Because you were sort of saying that people might look at the data that's coming out and see lots of low XG shots taking place. So they'll decide to say, right, we'll try and work it towards a penalty spot then instead and go for higher XG shots. Is that applied quite a lot in football?
I would say so now. I think it's just one of the things that's in people's psyche almost. I think part of our job is seeding new metrics into the mainstream. So to start off with the expected goals, there was a lot of pushback on it. Like people didn't want to know. But then once people start to understand it, they kind of see the value in it, if that makes sense. So again, Sky at halftime now will always have XG. Match of the day, we're one of the first people to actually put that on XG at the end of the game, saying this team had that many. And again, you get comments from people, nobody cares. But then XG now is an accepted part, I think, of the analysis. So you go back like 10, 15 years, maybe 15 years, people were interested in things like passes, tackles. And, the people who've worked at Opta for longer than me have said, people were interested in knowing how many successful passes this player had or how many tackles. It's only in more recent times that's actually become sort of an accepted just part of the analysis now.
Why do you think that is? Why has the sort of level of granular detail increased so much, do you think, and the fascination with it? Is it social media?
I think it's got a big part of it, yeah. I mean, I look back at when I first started at Opta, which is 2015, and I mean, even when I first applied in 2013, these kind of things weren't really out there online. And people might listen and say, actually, that's wrong. These were things, but they weren't things that I really saw. Like things like data websites where people had analysed the game. And part of that was because the data wasn't freely available. So if you worked at Opta, you had the data and you could use it. But unless you were a client of Opta, you couldn't necessarily take that data and use it yourself. Whereas now it's a lot more freely available. People can then, like Rennie Maric was assistant manager. And he came from just, as a blogger. And he was obviously very successful with that. And then that's how he's kind of got his way in. I think that's going to be how quite a lot of other people do end up, getting into professional football those kind of websites are more prevalent. I think you look at Twitter now and, there's that guy who just does the XG. I've forgotten his name.
The XG Philosophy.
I think XG Philosophy. That gets like 50,000. If it's like a really unjust game, that gets like 50,000 likes. People are like, people go mad for it. It's just an accepted part of the process.
In the old days, what you used to look at from a game, which was, for all the criticism XG gets, if you'd not seen a game, you would just look at shots on target was the thing you always used to look at, and you'd go, oh, I've had 8 shots on target, but they could have all been into the keeper's hands from 40 yards, couldn't they?
So XG basically adds another layer of value on top of that, doesn't it? I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't, is it right to say failing of XG would be, because it only counts shots, doesn't it? So if someone fails to have a shot, or if you've got, I'm just trying to think of a real life example, like Joffrey's goal against Norwich last year, if Rafinha doesn't pass to him, that was obviously a very good chance because Rafinha's around the keeper. From where he is, he's not going to score. But if he does pass it, which is an easy pass, then it's an almost guaranteed goal.
Yeah.
If he messes up that pass, it doesn't count as anything, does it, on XG? Whereas actually watching the game, you go, that was a golden opportunity there. You've got to score those.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was one with Bamford against Everton where I think Harrison laid it into him and he just flicked his leg at it and missed it. And again, that doesn't go down as a...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a, that, yeah, that would be it.
But there's, I guess there are limitations in any statistical method because you have to set parameters around it, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you get, I guess, as the final layer of watching it and going, oh, but actually, there was one where, Pat Bamford had an air shot.
So the eye test is important as well.
Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Is football quite hard to measure statistically as well? Because if you think about it, it's 22 players all moving and interacting with each other. The ball can theoretically go in any direction. How do you start to whittle down? Like you're saying, you're talking about how new metrics have kind of worked their way into the mainstream consciousness. Like somebody must have sat there and thought, right, I'm going to come up with XG now. Yeah. Like some galaxy brain has decided to do that. And how have they decided to do that? And what do you see when you see a football game? Does it look like chaos to you, or do you see it in statistical terms?
Yeah, for me personally.
Yeah.
It's a mixture of the two. Like I say, I try and have a mixture of the two where I don't go too, you know, like if Leeds are playing poorly, I don't want to sit there and be like, oh, I bet we've unsuccessful passes, you know, a lot today. I want to be there and I want to be shouting and cheering them on, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of finding a balance between, there are some people who do, and you know, I see people on Twitter, who are Leeds fans and fans of other teams who do see the game like that. And then they're the ones who can really break it down. And, you know, even like friends of mine who worked at Opta, who've got more of that sort of analytic brain, I would say, who can then go, I might be a little bit more coming from a passionate side of things where I come away and I'm like, and then they can kind of go, well, actually, you know, we actually played quite well today. That happened there. So their brains might work in a slightly different way, and more, I'm more of a, I like to reference all these players.
It's kind of borne out in the way that you tweet as well. And for anybody who doesn't follow you, just to repeat, it's at JohnnyCooper26 on Twitter. Well worth a follow, just because you come up with some really... I mean, every single time I see one of your tweets, I thought, oh, that's interesting, I like that. I wish I knew that. I wish I'd thought of that.
Sometimes it can be ridiculously niche, where I just think, there are times where I have had a tweet there ready to put on, and I thought, no, that is just like, that's just ridiculous. Like, nobody's going to be interested.
Like what?
I mean, well, there was one about Rodrigo that I had, that he scored in his last 5 league games against teams beginning with W.
That's brilliant. Why didn't you tweet that out?
But I mean, then I looked and it was like the longest run by a player against a team with the same letter since Luciano Becchio against teams beginning with N. And I just thought, like, that's not normal. Like, it really isn't. And who's going to find that interesting apart from me?
The Rodrigo one, I think, is good.
Yes. What has he got? One against Watford, 3 against Wolves, 1 against West Ham. So he likes Wolves, but he also likes Watford and West Ham. So just a shame Wimbledon aren't in the Premier League anymore.
You need to bounce these offers, because we'll definitely go, yeah, tweet that.
There's a few on Rodrigo. Like, he's got 13 goals, which is the most by a Leeds player aged 30 or more or older in a season since which player?
Chapman.
Correct. Oh, 92, go. 93, got 19.
I was there, baby. I was there. What else have you got then that's interesting from this season that we might not know?
Rodrigo's got the best, he's got the fourth best minutes per goal ratio in the Premier League this season behind Haaland, Isak and Kane, which is not bad. And he's got the best minutes per goal ratio by a Leeds player in a league season since David Sommer, 2010-11.
Wow.
Leeds United legend. Great finisher, to be fair.
He was very good with Sommer. Yeah. I remember that summer when he came back. He'd been away at Lincoln, hadn't he, on loan, and then he came back in pre-season with like long hair and a beard, looking all sexy and scoring loads of goals. And it was like, fucking hell, where's he come from?
Was there not some wishful thinking built into that? But you think,
what do you mean?
I mean, like... They were the fallow years, weren't they? And then
he was brilliant though for a time. He obviously suffered very badly with injuries, didn't he? Yeah. But yeah, he came back from Lincoln like a man transformed.
Yeah, I do love the tweets and the ideas that you come up with in terms of like first player since like Frank Strandley.
Yeah,
you
know? that's kind of what I look for, because Leeds fans love the history of the club. There was one when the lockdown season was bad because we weren't there, but from a statistical perspective, I was at home all the time, so I had my laptop there ready. So if something happened, and sometimes again, it's sad, but like before a game, I'll have things that might happen in a game ready to go. Like if it does happen, and like I'll look it up before. So things like Nonto, you know, most goals and assists by a teenager in a season since Fabian Delph, like that. I remember having that before he got the assist last time. And, you know, in the game when he didn't get an assist and wasn't that player, it didn't happen. So again, that kind of gets put in the draft. So it kind of stays in my mind.
I'm intrigued to know what you're waiting for this season.
If there's a really good one,
you've got.
Yeah, there is one, and it's about Archie Gray. But we'll have to wait. If he starts a game for Leeds in the Premier League and scores in his first start, then
is it going to be an all time record breaking type start?
It's a good one. Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, you've excited me now.
Yeah, I mean the other one is Liam Cooper will be the first player to play under 11 managers when he eventually plays under Grassier. He I think he got the league record, but Gary Kelly has got 10. And he played under Dave Geddes against Southend in the Cup. So,
how do you think of this stuff? I want to know what's going on in your brain.
Yeah, but you don't. Right? It's not a good place to be.
I guess someone like Archie Gray is a brilliant person to have, though, because you've got so much family stuff you can tie it into. Yeah. He's incredibly young.
Yeah.
Like you can, I imagine that you can say he's the first player from the third generation of you know, all that kind of stuff that you can go into, which is brilliant for stuff like that.
I mean, and we are foolishly sentimental, aren't we, about stuff like that?
Just hearing old players' names. I mean, TalkSport, Barry Glendening and Max Rushton do it, the Culverhouse thing they do, which is just them listing old footballers.
Yeah.
And it is good. It's a bit like the same feeling you get. Did you see the clip of Cilla Black signing off every episode of Surprise, Surprise? Just listing people who've been on the show. Just listing old entertainers, basically. But surprisingly engaging.
I haven't seen that. Is that right?
It was done the rounds on Twitter in the last week.
Okay.
But I watched it. Ultimate Chaos were mentioned and I thought, remember them.
Ultimate Chaos.
Just like daft old bands. It's the same with footballers. Yeah. I just love hearing like a random League One player's name thrown in. You say Ian Westlake and you go, oh God, we had him.
It is funny that like my standard go-to Ian Westlake fact is, because I remember seeing it on Football Focus, is that he was a swimming champion.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Do you have any swimming facts?
No,
yes,
definitely not.
I've outdone him.
I'm trying to think if I've got any Ian Westlake Leeds facts. I don't think he had much.
I mean, you've come armed with many, many sheets of paper here, Johnny.
Yeah, like, there is a lot going on.
A ridiculous amount of prep. What have you got there that you can surprise us with?
Well, one that I thought might be a bit of a talking point was, so across the last three seasons, Jack Harrison's got the 11th most chances created in open play in the Premier League, and it's the fifth most of any English player. So in that time, 12 English players have created more than 75 chances in open play, and he's the only one who hasn't got an England cap. Now, again, that's not me saying Jack Harrison should be in the England team, but do we think if Jack Harrison was playing for, say he got that move to Newcastle, and he suddenly started putting these numbers up for Newcastle, who are going for Europe, and, you know, we're in the cup final, do we think then he might be more on Gareth Southgate's radar? You know, say he got like three assists in a game, and it was like on Twitter again. Twitter's a big thing with like, he puts players on a pedestal as like, he's done this the first place to do that since, and it really pushes them to the forefront of people's minds. So I just wondered if you felt if he played for a team who were nearer the top, obviously we would wish he was playing for Leeds near the top, would he be in the reckoning?
It's funny as Jack is, and we've spoken about him in recent weeks on the show about his frustrating side, because it was Heroes and Villains, wasn't it? We had the good half of Jackie and the bad half of Jackie. It was Brighton, wasn't it? And obviously he didn't score the own goal in the end. A Leeds fan, are we too harsh on him? Should we value him higher based on the stats?
He's a frustrating player because you see that on certain days he can really do it, and he sort of appears to have a bit of everything as well. He's got a brilliant work rate. He can deliver a cross. He's got a good shot on him when he wants. And some days though he's just completely off it. And I think that's the frustrating thing. Like, which game was it this season when he was awful?
Was it Everton away?
He ended up with like a 47% pass completion rate or something. Like, just it was one of those games where you watched it and you were genuinely, it looked like a competition winner in it. It was a bit like in the League One days or whatever, when a player would turn up, or under the Chileno years, where you'd see like Edgar Chani turn up and you'd see him have a touch on the ball and you'd think, oh, I'm not sure about this. This looks
a bit like me in the park.
This looks kind of unconventional, and Habibu charging about and stuff like that. So he can look as bad as that when he's having a terrible day. Then again, I think if he was probably on the bench for Scum, he'd have a better chance of getting England caps.
Yeah.
Because I know Scum aren't the force they used to be, but in the old days, it used to be like Phil Neville would not play, he'd be on the bench for Scum, get in every England squad, he'd leave, play every game for Everton, never get in it again, which was always the pattern. And like Wes Brown and people like that, as soon as they actually left to play football, never seen again for England.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Edgar Chani did have the worst shot I think I've ever seen a Leeds player have. Get away at Brighton.
I didn't even know he'd had one.
Kick the floor and it just like pee rolled over the line. And I remember they showed that game in the pavilion on Beanback, and Edgar Chani, the first thing he did, and I was like, this is this is not good. Jesus Christ.
There's the Steve Morrison one that went out for a throw as well.
Was that game? Yeah, that was a shock.
That gif resurfaces every now and then, doesn't it? Where it drops him in front of the south stand, doesn't it? And he takes a, I think, is it on a half volley or something? Yeah. But it looks there. It's there to be hit, is what you would say. And then
it's made better by the commentator. Really goes for the shout, Morrison.
Oh God.
You're expecting the Dukara, and you get the Geoff Thomas. Oh,
yeah. I mean, that was a shock to everyone when that went in.
Yeah.
That was one of everyone. Oh, what? Didn't know I edited him.
And go on then, what else have you got?
Well, again, on Jack Harrison, so I put this on quite a lot when he scores. We do tend to win when Jack Harrison scores. Mm. So he's got an 80% win ratio in games he's scored in. So of the 85 players who scored in more than 20 games for Leeds, only Tony Yeboah has a higher win percentage in the games he scored in.
Wow.
91%.
Lucky Jackie, he's our talisman. Yeah.
Does Yeboah crop up quite a bit? Because he had a strange period at Leeds, because he's almost got legendary status from about 30 games.
Yeah, yeah. I think in his first 20 games, he's up there for like goals in first 20 games. A lot of the players who are top for that are players from like the 1920s and 30s, who tend to get forgotten. You know, Tom Jennings and Charlie Keatley. Charlie Keatley had like 4 hat-tricks in his first 20 games or something bonkers, which just doesn't happen anymore. Yeboah features quite a lot on goals in London for some reason. Like we don't score goals in London, obviously we don't win in London, but I think he got something like 10 in 7 games in London.
Got an absolute beauty. I think it was the opening day against West Ham. That one where he twatted it so hard, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think McCloskey and Ed just went, well, it was just really too hard. I can't save that.
How often do you think about Tony Yeboah, like really?
More than I should. Considering, like you say, he played a handful of games.
And I say this, your left hand actually is resting on him on the desk here.
It is. I met him, and that was nice. I've still got the. I'll treasure the picture of me and Tony.
Yeah, I probably think about him once every week, 2 weeks, I think.
Well, it's just those goals.
He was so good,
and he's the reference point for a goal off the crossbar. Bamford the other week.
Yeah,
you can't see a ball going off the crossbar. Ailing against Huddersfield, ball off the bar. You think Yeboah.
Yeah,
every single time. Dukara hits a volley very hard.
Yeboah.
Yeah,
that's true.
He's the like the zero AD. Yeah. For volleys, isn't he?
Which is weird. I mean, when you look back at his goals, he scored loads of different types of goals. There were some good headers in there. There were ones where he did dink it. There were the ones where he ran from 40 yards out, went past a few people, put it in the corner. But yeah, it's just because hitting a ball very hard. anyone who does that, you just go.
So football is a simple game, isn't it?
Bit Yeboah-ish that.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah, for people over a certain age, I think definitely. So Harrison's the lucky talisman. We need to be kinder to Jackie.
Yeah. Oh, the other one, just about Tony Yeboah, by the way, just before we move on from Tony. Not that we want to, but...
We don't have to.
He was born on the 6th of the 6th, 66, and he played 66 games for Leeds.
His date of birth was always a point of contention, wasn't it? People used to speculate that he was older than he'd said. And I guess if you're going to lie, it's a nice, easy one to remember, isn't it?
Yeah.
For any forms. Don't get it wrong, Tony. You've got to keep things on the straight and narrow here. I mean, if he was in his mid-30s when he played for Leeds.
Great.
All the more credit to him, because you couldn't tell at all. And by the time he did come back for Lucas's testimonial...
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Great, yeah. I have to say, because I was really looking forward to seeing Yeboah again then.
Although we have since like looked at him and he's holding the... it's not called the UEFA Cup anymore, is it? What is it called?
Europa League.
The Europa League trophy that Frankfurt won. Mm. And he's holding that. So it's kind of like holding up today's newspaper in terms of date, isn't it? That? Yeah. And he looked well. He looked like he's... he's laid off the Yorkshire puddings.
Yeah, I follow him on Instagram. I think he's got remarried and he's doing that.
Oh, so he's putting effort in again.
I think he's putting effort in again. I think he's what's happened. So
suddenly found myself single. Going to take up jogging.
Me or Dan with a nice suntan and a bit of weight. You'll know what's happened. The hair transplant going through the front.
I am desperate for you to walk in one day like that Shearer meme.
Yes.
So are we moving on from Yeboah and hair transplant? Sorry, we've got sidelined, haven't we?
No, that's fine. The one about Christensen, quickest sub goal since Leon Constantine broke his arm.
Yeah,
Kenny Soldham.
Nice. That is a good stat.
What's the other one? Well, we've won our last 4 games when we started in the relegation zone as well, so maybe it's not a...
So we need to be in there to get out of there. I saw a stat actually this week, last week, whenever it was. Was it even an Opta stat? It might have been that the team that's been... Oh, it was Premier League who tweeted it out, so it might have been one of yours.
Yeah.
That the team that's been in 20th position at the start of the game, has had the best record in the bottom half across the whole season or something.
Yeah.
So the worst team becomes the best team and they just keep recycling different teams to bottom.
This season seems ripe for changing some relegation stats because it's so fluid at the bottom and there are so many teams in there. It feels like there'll be stats of it'll end up being someone like Palace, who hadn't been in the bottom three all season, but did go down. They were only in the bottom three for 7 days and they went down, or something like, they were in the bottom three for an hour and they went down, or something, is what I think it'll end up being this
for
season.
An hour, imagine that. You'd be furious, wouldn't you?
Yeah, last kick of the season.
We could be furious.
Well, yeah. But if you manage to avoid it all season, then you go down with the last kick and you're like, well, we were in there for a minute and we're in the Championship next season.
It's a sad hangdog face of Roy Hodgson.
I think, to be fair, last year when we obviously went into the last game not knowing if we were going to stay up, I think we'd only been in the relegation zone about 23, 24 days. Mm. Might have been a couple more, but it was like the fewest potentially by a team going down for about 20 years. So we, last season was horrendous, but we weren't really in the relegation zone that much. So
did you think we were staying up on the last day?
Jesus, that was a stressful day.
Because I didn't.
No, I was. You just convince yourself, don't you? It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I think I thought we were going to stay up, but I would have fully accepted it as not. I don't know. It's the same reason why we've got the standing joke of we've always got one in us that I do on the Phil Hayes show, because I don't know, sometimes Leeds pull these stupid things out of the bag, and it's often when we've all been put through the mill in the worst possible way. I think it's almost like they like to punish us before redeeming themselves at like the 11th hour.
Maybe.
It was a nice feeling though, wasn't it, when that ball hit the net 90th minute. Made it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, we had suffered up to that point though, hadn't we? It was a bloody horrible season.
Yeah.
Horrible. But then Jackie scores and we win, don't we?
Exactly.
What else have we got?
There's one about the FA Cup draw. No, that was a big thing with 12 consecutive away draws. That's a joint record in the history of the FA Cup, which has been going 151 years, and we are joint record holders, which is not bad.
I have absolutely no doubt that record will become ours next year.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost hope we get it, really. We deserve it, I feel.
We deserve something.
Well, I had a bit of a further deep look into it. And so since the last time we got a home draw, which was Rotherham, January 2016, Mustafa Carriol's finest hour.
That was a game I'd completely forgotten about. Speaking about how I forget entire games now, that was one where I saw the goal. Good goal, wasn't it?
Great goal, yeah.
But I saw it surfaced on Twitter and I was like,
no,
don't remember that happening.
Just don't recognise Ellen Road in the FA Cup. So there's 101 teams have played in the top four tiers of English football since then, and Leeds are the only one who haven't had a home draw. Shrewsbury Town have had 18 home draws since we last got a home draw in the FA Cup. Man United had, I think, 15.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
The heating balls,
yeah, I think it must be. Because it does go to the point where it is kind of like beyond a joke, really.
And we're starting to sound like Wolves fans here, aren't we? Because we get the tinfoil hats on and all the rest of it.
If there's a conspiracy to stop Leeds winning the FA Cup,
it's working.
It's just not necessary.
Yeah, we don't look at
our record in it. It's absolutely abysmal. Even when we've had brilliant sides over the years, always still shit in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Somebody posted that 98. I was only four, but when Hasselbaink missed a penalty, Keith Curl was just so aggressive. I didn't realise how aggressive he was.
Fucking Don Goodman that day as well.
Yeah. Who was it that was chucking mud at Hasselbaink as he took the penalty?
That was Curl.
Was that Curl?
No, it was Muscat.
Muscat, yeah.
It was fucking Muscat.
Search your right for Muscat.
Search your right for Muscat. Yeah, of course it was Muscat.
Yeah, it was lobbing bits of mud.
Yeah, Curl was the one who grabbed him by the face, I think it was. Yeah. He sort of around the neck into his jaw.
Just angry.
Sneered at him.
Yeah, the FA Cup's for other people, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not for us. Not for us. No.
We should not enter next
year. So uncouth, yeah, like Man United did when they were after the World.
Just don't bother.
Let's just save everyone some hassle.
Or win it would be the other thing I'd like us to do. Yeah. I allow myself to get carried away this season, I think, because we managed to scrape through against a couple of shit teams. Yeah. I was thinking, tell you what, it's opening up.
Names on the cup.
It's opening up. But I mean, looking at it, if Fulham probably... were kind of on course to cause an upset, I would say, the other day against Scum, until they completely went mad. And then you're looking at the teams left in it, and you would be thinking, got a chance here. I know Man City are still in it, aren't they?
Yeah, then we get to the final, lose to Man City 7-0.
I mean, Man City are ruining stats, aren't they? And Haaland.
Well, Haaland, yeah. I mean, that's the thing about, you look back at, again, historical stats of compared to Dixie Dean. And that's kind of why the cut-off point is the Premier League, because that's sort of, we have all the footage of those goals, all the assists, everything like that. So that's kind of the cut-off point. But
Football began in 1992.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that's the thing that gets kind of, chucked to them. I mean, I'd love to have a database which has every appearance by a player in the top flight, but it's, quite difficult to come by. But, we'll work on it. But, he's obviously incredible. But it just makes me laugh when, you get people saying, is he going to do it in the Premier League, though? Is he going to... You think, yes, the man's like a robot, right? He's just...
But I said it's like Rory Jennings, though. And
we know anyone who does well at Salzburg will do well in the Premier League.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah.
I do wonder what it is that makes him... Is it just that he's in the best team who've set up to play, to feed him, to... I don't know. He just seems to be in the right place all the time, doesn't he? And he hits it dead hard.
Yeah. And I think he's a mixture of loads of different things, isn't he? He's got the sort of positional awareness and the the coolness under pressure that you expect of, like, I don't know, Kevin Phillips, someone to name like a generic high scoring Premier League player. But then he's also fucking massive and really quick. Mm. So he's got the speed of Owen, the physicality of like Drogba or someone. Yeah. Just got everything. It's ridiculous. It's not fair.
I think it's the physicality and the strength. Like I've not seen anybody out muscle him. I mean, could be wrong. Like there could be somebody I've forgotten. But like when he came to Elland Road and it was like, yeah, I can't remember who was in defence that day. Was Llorente in defence that day? Hopefully, I don't think he would have been, because he would have probably crushed him. But he was just you just looked at him, you just thought, yeah, we're not stopping him. Mm. I think Cooper was centre half, wasn't he? Because he could get the ball away, didn't he?
Admittedly, had an absurdly good record against Leeds, but Shearer was the other player who I used to just watch and think, there's no way we're stopping him scoring. Yeah. Like he will score today. It's just a matter of when. Yeah. And he always used to do it. But
Cock and Cooper, by the way, just to answer that Cock question.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Strauch was at left back.
He's as strong as J. Roy Grott.
amazingly, I've just looked. I think, who's that at right back? And they've put R. Nissen. But I think it's Rasmus.
Yeah, he's got I think it's like some Scandinavian naming convention
that we weren't aware of.
That have gone on there.
Yeah, they were quite good that day, weren't they? And annoyingly so, that you just knew that all it would take is one sniff and they would score. And the fact that they just put a couple on a plate for Haaland, stop it. It's just not fair, is it? He has broken everything.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to remember that they have got De Bruyne feeding him like easy like chances. He's the best, you know, one of the best players in the Premier League, best, most creative player in the Premier League. You put that with Haaland and how do you stop that? That's why I just say it's crazy.
Is there anything that stood out to you from a Leeds perspective this season that maybe we weren't aware of that isn't sort of broadly known?
I mean, there's a few down here, but they're not. Yeah, they're kind of known, I guess. The one about Firpo with yellow cards is always a good one.
What's that?
He's got the worst minutes per rally yellow card ratio in Premier League history.
Oh, wow.
Of any player to play 2,000 minutes.
That is good going.
Yeah.
It's impressive because he's not a dirty player either.
No, he just does that kind of pulls people down foul. Or just flips, like he just grabs all of them and yellow, done. Hasn't been sent off, so he just kind of sticks on the yellow.
Mm. Yeah, you think it'd be someone like Lee Catamol or someone who would have been, just to pick a player from the era when you couldn't kick people anymore.
But even then it's changed.
But I don't know, yeah, maybe.
I mean, now they are so militant about yellow cards that compared to then, you could always get away with one back then.
Mm.
And it's VAR that's kind of cemented it, I think.
I feel like you get too many yellows now. I know from watching back sort of 91, 92 stuff, the concept of letting everyone have one was very much there in those days. And there's some stuff goes on early in games and you think, Jesus Christ, that's like a proper leg breaker there. But because it's in the third minute, refs are like, it's fine. Yeah. Just don't do it again. Don't break his other leg.
So like Tony Adams back in the day was always like, I'll go through the back of him once and the referee will go, that's your first one, Tony. That's your next one's a yellow. So
you knew you always got one.
Yeah, every game, like just do that and just, yeah, crazy.
Leave one on each other. Yeah, but VAR has changed it, I think, hasn't it? Have you got any stats about VAR? There you go.
No, I don't. You know,
the conspiracy.
I'm not a VAR person. I don't like VAR, to be honest. I've never wanted it in.
I don't know anyone who actually attends games who likes VAR. No. I think people who just watch football on telly are kind of all right with it and maybe aren't as invested in a particular team. If you watch football as a TV sport, it makes more sense, I think.
Well, because it is by its very definition video. It's the right medium, isn't it?
Mm. Whereas in the stadium, it's awful.
Yeah. Because you're not quite sure what's going on, are you?
No, never. You're completely uninformed. And you get, like, you're celebrating a goal sometimes and you see the ref doing that little thing where he puts his hand out to one side while opposition players are moaning at him and you can see him going, we're checking it. You think, what are you checking? There's nothing wrong with that. Just give it.
Because you realise that they're checking something, but then it takes them a minute to put something up on the screen, potential red card, potential offside, whatever it might be. So there's always that lag, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's an interesting article in The Guardian, actually, that's been published in the last few days about referees. It's one of those sort of long reads, and it's about how easily they are influenced by the crowd, particularly home crowds, and how they try and speeding up VAR and how sometimes they make panic decisions. Mm. What I took away from it is we should lean on refs more as a crowd, basically, to try and influence.
First minute. Boo. Mind you, it didn't work for Wolves, did it? Because they were at it from pretty early on, because I think because of things that have happened to them in the previous weeks, they were absolutely livid about every decision, weren't they, from the start of that game, and it quite spectacularly backfired, I would say.
Yeah, it was interesting. They were saying they get briefed by, I don't know if it's HQ or brief them, or whether it's the refs themselves who have this sort of data about what particular players will do, which ones are prone to like falling over, stuff like that, and they watch out for them. They mentioned specifically, didn't say who it was, but there was one Everton player in particular that they'd been tipped off has a tendency to go down easily. So they were told to watch out for that. So there is bias that's introduced into it, like with how the referee games.
That's interesting. And it's fair enough.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like when certain players don't get a free kick, you kind of think, well, good.
Yeah.
Don't deserve one.
Yeah. Thinking about Bruno Fernandes again, aren't you?
Dear me. Yeah, he's awful.
Any stats you want to share with us then, Johnny, before we wrap it up?
Well, I've got a couple of the ones that I've kind of discovered over time from the database.
So
we've had two hat-tricks scored by teenagers in Leeds United's history. Can you name the two players?
Ooh.
1966, 1985.
Tommy Wright.
Tommy Wright, correct.
Was it against Wolves? Not Wolves.
Notts County.
Notts County, right. Okay.
66.
Wolves, I think he scored two, actually. Yeah, I'm glad I got that, though.
Yeah, that's very good. The other one's a more well-known player. In fact, very well-known.
Eddie Gray?
Peter Lorimer. So the fact about that is Peter Lorimer did that in 1966, January 1966, and then Tommy Wright did that in January 1985. Peter Lorimer played in both games.
Do you know what? Who was I talking to about this the other day? I can't remember. Was it you, maybe, Michael? I remember years ago, one of my first VHS tapes that I had that I kept, because when Leeds were on telly, when we were in the second division in the 80s, they were just never on. It was just, you know, you were lucky if you got a bit of highlights on the local news. And I remember, I think it was the big match, might have done an extended bit of coverage, and it was Leeds against Wolves, which is the game that I was thinking of.
Yeah.
And I can still to this day remember Tommy Wright playing in that game. Yeah. I might have even, do you know what? It might have even been Oxford. Definitely someone sort of yellow goldie.
Yeah.
And Tommy Wright played in that game, scored in that game, and Lorimer played in that game as well. Because that was who Lorimer was to me. It was somebody who was at the back end of his career. Mm. And I saw him sort of after he made his comeback at Leeds in the 80s.
Lorimer's quite dominant in stats as well, isn't he? Because he's the youngest and most goals, and it's pretty unlikely either of those will be broken anytime soon. Was Archie Gray ever in with the chance of breaking it? I think he might have been.
Yeah, I think he was, I don't know if he was a few days younger than Lorimer, but he was, I think when he was on the bench against Arsenal, he was around that time.
Yeah.
I think he would have been the youngest if he had come on. But like, Lorimer spanned sort of so many different eras. Like he played, the thing with Lorimer is like he played with John Charles, who made his debut in 49, and he also played with Terry Phelan, who also played with Phil Jagielka. So that's how like,
Close to the modern day already,
just from Peter Lorimer, just in two players. So, yeah, Lorimer features in loads. Like Stuart Dallas scored away at Man United and Man City in the lockdown season, and that, he was the first player to do that in the same season since Lorimer in 71-72. And I think he just died like the month before. So, you know, he pops up everywhere.
And go on then, give us one big stat to finish us off, Johnny.
So we have a player who has the record for the most top flight goals in a season for a team who's relegated that season. That's a Leeds player. That's a Leeds stat.
While at Leeds?
Yep. This is 1927.
Oh.
It's one of the lads, isn't it?
It's going to be Rodrigo this season.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
I hope not. But yeah, that was Tom Jennings. 35 goals and we got relegated. Yeah.
Jesus. We were saying on the podcast this week, if you can get like, if Rodrigo does get to 15 or 20, it's basically impossible to get relegated with a striker who scores that many, but 35 in a season.
And he got 12 in October 1926 and nobody else that season got more than 11 league goals. So he got more in 1 month and he scored a hat-trick in three consecutive league games, which is one of the top flight records. So
makes me feel all the worse for having to sit through George Graham.
Oh God, yeah.
I feel like he's probably broken a few stats in that season as well. And we scored like six goals all season, it felt like. It was absolutely dismal.
Yeah, so after some frantic Googling, and thanks to oswhiteLUFC.net.au, who put together some brilliant stats across the years, like recording Leeds games, I've discovered it was the 1st of September 1984 against Wolves at home, 3-2, we beat them, and Tommy Wright scored twice, and Peter Lorimer scored once in that game. That was the game I was thinking of in my head. Well, thank you for all your work, Johnny. We appreciate it. Keep tweeting, because I think the Leeds United Twitter sphere is better for having you tweeting stuff out into it. Brilliant facts every single week, so keep up the good work, as the saying goes.
Thank you. Yeah, I keep trying to keep it positive as long as we keep winning. That was the best thing about the Bielsa era was that we had so many good stats and positive things to say. So, yeah, fingers crossed it's a nice end to the season. And, yeah, try and get that Archie Gray stat out there. Keep an eye out.
Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.